We're having a very short class, given that we've had a very long class already. So we're having a very short class on the Jewish home. And we're in the middle of conversational styles. We said this might be the most important part of marriage, how we speak. And tonight I want us to discuss, I'm not even sure how to term it, maybe attitudes which are reflected in the verbiage we use. So let's take an example. I'll tell you a story and tell me how you think of the story, okay? He woke up in the morning, looked out the window, saw the birds chirping, the sun was shining, clean, crisp air coming through the window. He charged out of bed, took a wonderful shower, went outside, took in the excellent air, saw the butterflies sipping their nectar from the flowers, looked at the beautiful colors of each and every flower, took a moment to appreciate, take in the aroma of the flowers as they blossomed, stood and enjoyed the pristine beauty that surrounded him. Don't you find yourself calmer and happier? Now let's take another story. Identical story, almost. He woke up in the morning having slept terribly. The bed was bumpy. It was raining outside. Another dreary, dark, cloudy day. He suffered at the thought of wearing his tight galoshes again, as that little hole would let water protrude through his galoshes, walking into work with his wet socks. He trudged out of bed, headed towards the shower, thinking of the gloomy day that lay ahead. Don't you find yourself a little bit depressed as you hear the story? So they did this research, I think, in Harvard, where they gave people a questionnaire. And one questionnaire had a bunch of positive questions with positive answers. So they'd ask a question like, how happy are you on an average day? And then the choices would be, I'm happy, I'm very happy, I'm extraordinarily happy. All the questions were positively oriented. And then they took a control group of 50, 100 students, gave them that questionnaire. And then at the end of the filling out the questionnaire, they'd have to go down the hall and stand in line to hand in the questionnaire. Now, they'd have the guy in front of him in line be this really annoying guy who couldn't figure out how to hand in the questionnaire. So you'd stand behind this guy in line, and the guy in front of you is like, well, can you explain to me, please, where do I put my last name? Right here? Oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was supposed to be there. Let me just erase it for a minute. And the guy in front of you in line would be standing there for 5-10 minutes doing the stupidest things, couldn't figure out how to fill out the name on the questionnaire to hand it in. And they had an identical group, 50, 100 students, who were given an identical questionnaire, only with negative terms, where the question, instead of how happy are you on an average day, would be how upset are you on an average day. On an average day, I'm this angry, I'm this annoyed, I'm this upset. And at the end of filling that questionnaire, again, they'd go down the hall, stand in line, the guy in front of them would be that same annoying guy, only they didn't know. The real research was to see how long it took people from each group to get annoyed at the guy in front of them in line. So what they didn't know was that the research was not what they filled in on the paper, but how they were when they stood in line. And they stood there behind, you know, glass windows, and they started timing how long it took the average person from the first group, who had just filled out a questionnaire with positive words, how long it took them to get annoyed. No one got annoyed. They stood in line, they waited patiently with smiles on their faces, and the guy in front of them was like a really annoying guy. The second group had a very high percentage of people that lost their patience within 2 minutes. Hey, buddy, if you don't know how to fill out a form, let me go through. What's wrong with you? What did they discover? That the words we deal with affect our moods. We don't even notice it. If we're dealing with positive words, we end up feeling positive. If we're dealing with negative words, we end up feeling negative. So one of the ways in which we can bring the home forward, in which we can make things positive, is by being positive externally. There's a fantastic book named Blink. There were two researchers, I forgot their name, who were researching facial expressions. And what they did was they'd sit opposite one another and start analyzing all the muscles in the face and seeing if you move this muscle, how many muscles do you move to make a smile? And which muscles in your brow? And they broke up the face into components and they tried to figure out when you move this, that, the other muscle, which position is angry and which position is sad. So let's just pause for a second. I have a fascinating story to tell you guys. I once met with a top psychologist, most brilliant psychologist I ever met. And we were discussing a certain case, and he said to me, "This person's not normal." I said, "What do you mean they're not normal?" He said, "They're not normal." I said, "What do you mean? You didn't meet the person. How do you know?" He said, "Look at their Facebook picture." So we open up Facebook, he shows me the picture, and he says, "You see they're not normal?" I said, "No, I see a human being. How do you know they're not normal?" He said, "Watch." He covers up the whole face except for one eye. And he says to me, "Is the person happy, sad, upset, glad? Where are they in life?" I said, "Looking at that eye, they look upset." I said, "Okay." Now he covers up the rest of the face and he shows me the other eye. He says, "Now what would you say?" I'd say, "They're pretty upset." He covers up the top part of their face and shows me only the nose. And suddenly you realize that by just looking at a segment of the face, you see a lot of expression. We don't think of it that way, but if you take a picture, take an ad of someone smiling, and cover up everything but their forehead, even the creases in the forehead reflect certain emotions. And we don't realize it, but our mind processes all of this, and that's part of our body language. Now, what these researchers were doing, they were trying to zone in on all the different muscles we use, and they figured maybe they could master body language and show people how to look genuinely happy when they weren't, or genuinely sad when they weren't. Because what we do is we lie. We say, "I'm so happy to see you." But the way we squint with our eyes, we're telling the other person, "I can't stand seeing you." There are certain movements that we make that indicate we're uncomfortable, we're not real. There are certain movements that we make that indicate that we're really not comfortable talking to the guy we're talking to. There are moves that we make. There are like moves we do with our eyes. There are, you know, if you scratch your neck often, you notice that when people lie, they start sweating and you feel uncomfortable, they feel uncomfortable. They don't even mean to give the message. We give hidden messages. So when Dr. Tversky became a psychologist, he's a top psychologist. You guys probably saw his book, Psychiatrist, right? So when Dr. Abraham J. Tversky started psychiatry, he came out of, he came on the ward, and there was a patient who was hypochondriac, you know. "Oh boy, my thumb's hurting me." So he comes in and he checks the patient and he tells the nurse, it's his first day on the job, he tells her, "Why don't you give him a solution of," and he says the fancy name for salt water. What's the fancy name for salt water?
Saline.
Now, he didn't say saline solution. That the guy would have caught on. He said it from a chemical, hydrosodium maybe?
sodium salt.
So maybe he told him, yeah, he needs a shot of hydrosodium, whatever. and he leaves the room and he assumes he's giving the patient a placebo. This patient just needs to feel like someone's doing something for him. And the nurse calls him aside and says, "Doctor, I'm sorry, I can't do that." So he tells her, "Why can't you do that?" She says, "Well, we have orders from the head of the department that we're not allowed to give placebos in this department." So he says, "I don't understand. I was here as an intern. We did this nonstop. What do you mean as a doctor I can't give a placebo?" So she says, "Look, not my order. Go to the head of the department." He said, "No." So, fine. He goes to the head of the department. He asks him, "What's going on?" So the head of the department says, "Dr. Tversky, have a seat. When you come and talk to a patient, there are very important points you're trying to give that patient. One of the most important points you're trying to give that patient is trust. He's going to trust you. He has a psychological or psychiatric issue. He's trusting you. When you walk in and tell him he needs a placebo, what happens is your mouth says, 'I'm prescribing.' Your body language uncontrollably says, 'I'm lying to you.' You don't have control over it. He senses it. He doesn't know what he's sensing, but he senses they're lying to me. And he won't be able to define it, but he knows it because we sense body language. So what happens next is you prescribe something and internally he is now shaky in his trust in you. And legitimately so. And you don't even sense it. But you have compromised your capacity to deal with that patient because the patient, his trust has gone down. So that's why I decided that in this floor we never give a placebo because we're destroying our capacity to help the patient. We're ruining the patient's trust. So coming back to our story. So these two scientists were studying body language because we do reflect in body language. And what they were studying was how you move different muscles in your face. And they spent months, studying which muscles make you upset. And after a few weeks of practicing the muscles that make you look upset, they noticed that they were pretty upset. And they'd come home really upset. And then when they spent the month studying the muscles that you move when you're happy, they noticed that they'd come home much happier at the end of the day. So they realized that it doesn't only work it from inside out, it also works from outside in, like the Rambam writes. This is a Rambam in the introduction to Pirkei Avos. The Rambam says, you want to acquire a trait, behave as though you have it. So if we get accustomed to smiling, if we get accustomed to showing positive feelings, we will have positive feelings. You want to be happy? I'll give you a very easy form of therapy. You want to be happy? You want to calm yourself down? So 2 years ago when we did this class, I said, we're going to practice now. For the next 2 minutes, everyone has to put a dumb smile on their face and remain with that smile on their face. And by the end of 2 minutes, everyone admitted that they were happier. But then I saw a scientist, an interview with a scientist that gave an easier idea. They said, take a pen, put it between your teeth, and stay like this for 2 inches. Really the same idea. By putting a pen between your teeth, you're forcing yourself to smile. But you don't feel like, you don't feel foolish, right? Because you're not just walking around with this fake smile. But the truth is, the fake smile does the job. And the pen between teeth, 2 minutes. They've discovered 2 minutes is enough for us to release the hormones to be happy.
Is so, to
do in marriage? so that's what we're going to discuss right now. So what do you do in marriage? Right. I'll tell you what you do in marriage. You're joking. I was sitting in this office 3-4 years ago. An alumnus of Machon Meir comes in and says to me, every night I come home and there's an explosion. I walk through the door and my wife is lying in bed. I walk in after a whole day's worth of work and there's silence, like the house is dead. So I close the door quietly and I hear a moan. I'm tiptoeing and there's another moan and I say, what's wrong? Every day it's a similar story, a similar scene. You won't believe what headache I had. You won't believe what a tough day I've had. She's lying in bed with splitting headaches. Now after my long day of work, I gotta do all the diapers, I gotta do all the dishes, gotta do all the garbage, gotta do all the cooking, gotta do all the cleaning. I walk home, the explosions that happen when I walk through that door, no day, he says, I can't remember the last time I walked through the door. There weren't fights. So I told him, let's make a deal. Before you walk home, I think he used to take a bus, I don't remember. He said, let's say he takes a bus. You get off the bus, you sit at the bus stop, you don't go home. I didn't tell him, take a pen, put it between your teeth and smile. I said, smile. Smile and smile and smile and get yourself psyched up. I'm going to come home and whatever's going to happen, I'm going to stay smiling and calm. Smile. 5 minutes. Just prepare yourself. I'm going to walk through the door. I know this is going to happen. I know I'm not going to upset and I'm going to smile. It worked. It worked. He worked from outside in. He worked from outside in. But he got tired of it. So after it worked for about a half a year, they saw it was working, he kept it up. And after about a half a year, he got tired of it, and things started exploding. And about a year later, so their marriage was on the brink, and his wife told him, you got to go to him again. I don't know what he told you, but whatever he told you worked. So he comes back, and I didn't have time at the time. So I said, look, I really don't have time. I'll set you up with the therapist. So the guy says, no, my wife says to come to you. I said, yeah, I don't have time. I can't do it. He says, no, my wife says only you. I said, I can't. The only way I could do it is for 800 shekel for 45-minute session. I said it to get a woman off my back. I had no interest of taking the money or doing it. What do you think? A day later, it comes back. 800 shekel, my wife says that, or the marriage is gone. Now, what was the big eitzah? Okay, you had to rebuild it. But the big kunz was, I still couldn't do it, you know. For 800 shekel, I still couldn't do it. But it wasn't the issue of the money. I said it more to leave me alone. I can't, time-wise. But the issue was, he had to decide, I'm going to work externally in. I'm going to come home. I know it's going to be upsetting. I'm not going to get upset. And the way to get to that equilibrium after his hard day of work was to sit at the bus stop, 5 minutes, smile at the birds, smile at the trees, smile at the kids, smile at the cats, smile. Walk through the door calmly. You know things are going to explode. You know she's going to say things that are going to drive you off the wall. Smile. Smile and smile and smile. And that external could bring us in. But that's not even where we were headed yet. Obviously, what we just discussed is an excellent tool in marriage. So no, I'm not suggesting to sit for supper and take the spoon and put it between your teeth. Honey, I'm all ears. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying. But you could force a smile, and forcing a smile will force you to calm down. And you could get into the habit. There was once a couple I told the guy, we're going to make a deal. Every time you're about to get mad, you're going to force yourself to smile for 30 seconds. Before you allow yourself to say anything upset, you're not allowed to yell, raise your voice, get upset, before you've smiled for 30 seconds. You smiled at your wife for 30 seconds, then you decide what you do. He told me every time he did it, he didn't end up yelling, he didn't end up doing anything. 30 seconds smiling. So he felt really stupid. And his wife caught on. She'd see the smile, she'd say, oh no, I know it's coming now. Right? No, but it didn't come. It didn't, because if we can calm down and smile, we've calmed ourselves. But that's not even where we're headed tonight. That was just to get us to the point of what words do we use. I'll get to you in a minute, Yaakov. What words? Someone else did. I don't know. I sent them to the therapist. They're still married. They have more kids. And Baruch Hashem. I don't know. I don't know how happy or unhappy, but they're still married, and as far as I know, they're happily married. So Baruch Hashem, it seems to have had a happy ending. Yes.
Have you heard of laughing clubs before?
Laughing clubs?
Laughing clubs. In India, it's quite a common practice. And in the morning before work, groups of people get together and they just laugh for like a half hour. That's how they start their day.
We should totally do that before shiur.
The Gemara says. Rava used to begin his shiur with a joke. It would start to something to make people smile and laugh, and after that, they would go into intense learning, for sure. But coming back to what we were discussing, we have to gauge what terms we're using. Very often a person will find themselves in raising their children or in dealing with their spouse, the terms they're using, like that story of the test they were taking, they end up forming their mood. So if we can become accustomed to speaking positively, we will be more positive people. Yes?
So, a technique that me and my friend would use, because, you know, I used to have a friend here at the Malchon. He's gone now, but, we had a lot of serious conversations together, but before we had any of those conversations, what we would do is we would sit around for a couple of minutes telling jokes, and we would not just tell jokes and laugh like normal people do. We would tell jokes and laugh hysterically. Not because the jokes were so funny, but because we just felt we need to laugh. So we would work each other up till we were like crying and laughing and just like it was like out of control. And like we did this before like very serious, like very deep conversations to get ourselves like in a lighter mood. Is that a valid technique?
If it works for you, what am I going to say? I think that this idea of gauging our words is a concept which can be applied starting today. Because if a person notices, our life is very much a recurring theme. Most people who were upset with their high school were also upset with their college. Most people who had issues with one friend being disloyal or being unfair to them, had it with another one. We had a student here who called me up a few months after he got married. He said, I heard you said something about me that really offended me. So I said, look, I don't know what we're talking about, but let's meet, and if I'm wrong, I'll be happy to apologize. No problem. So we met. And I agreed with him I was wrong in something I had said. I apologized, and I called him numerous times to apologize again and again. And I said, you know, I understand why what I said hurt your feelings, and I was wrong, and I really feel bad for it. And he never made up with me. So initially I said, okay, he's entitled. You know, he feels I spoke improperly. Fine. He's entitled to say, I want to have nothing to do with you. But then I discovered that the same thing happened with every single student he was connected to in the yeshiva. So I said, everyone's bad. I understand I'm bad. But how come every student he had as a friend over here, how come one after another I'd hear from the guys, you know, they're no longer in touch with so-and-so. Why? So we live our lives in cycles, in recurring themes. And one of the recurring themes is our attitude. Our attitude to people, our attitude to things, our attitude to life, our attitude to God. And if we can get into the habit of speaking positively, of using positive terms, so then we're going to get into the habit of being positive. Just like that research showed, the words we use will very often fashion our approach to things. We can look at what the problem is. I have relatives who will always counter. My kids! You're kidding? Every kid went through a stage where they were completely contrary. They were completely contrary. Anything I'd say, they'd say the opposite. So one of the kids is at that stage now. The kids came to go to sleep. So he said, I don't want to sleep in this bed. I want to sleep in that bed. So I said, no problem. You're in that bed. No, I don't want that bed. I want this bed. Okay, you could have that bed. I had this with a few of the kids. They get up in the morning and they say, Abba, what sandwich did you make me? So I say, peanut butter. No, I wanted jelly. Okay, I'll make you a jelly sandwich. Fine. If I have to go make a jelly sandwich, fine. So after a while, I learned. I'd make one peanut butter and one jelly. And then the kid asked me, Abba, what sandwich did you make me? Peanut butter. Okay, I don't want peanut butter. I want jelly. You know what? I made you a jelly sandwich. No, never mind. I want a peanut butter sandwich. So now if this happened with one kid, you'd say, okay, but what I did, and I did this with more than one kid, I'd say, tell me. I'm not telling you what's in the bag. If I say peanut butter, you'll say jelly. I say jelly, you'll say peanut butter. What do you want? And the kid stands there stumped. Now, again, I've had this with a few of the kids. Sometimes we don't realize the styles we've entered. Usually after you corner them, after you do that to the kid, I do this with each kid. Every time they, after a few mornings of being super frustrated, I say, last night you asked me for peanut butter, I made you peanut butter. Yeah, but did I want jelly? And so, sometimes I do the reverse. The kid asked me, what'd you make me, Dad? I made you jelly. No, I want peanut butter. No problem, your peanut butter's in the fridge. No, I changed my mind. I want jelly again. Never mind, you said peanut butter. That's what's in the fridge. But when I've cornered them, when I put the kid against himself, and I said, I'm not telling you what's in the sandwich. You tell me what you want, because whatever I'm going to say, you're going to say the other one. The kid suddenly realizes, hey, you know, he's right. So you'd be surprised where a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old can suddenly realize, wait a second, I've been completely contrary. Usually that resolves it. Usually it doesn't happen again. So we never have anyone put us in the corner and face ourselves. If we can, what we should try to do, starting now, is notice how many times do we complain? What words are we using most during the day? How many times can we be complimentary? I remember I dated a Yemenite, maybe not Yemenite, I don't remember. I dated a girl from Sephardi origin. I don't know if it was Yemenite or Sephardi or something. The reason I remember, I'll tell you in the dating series, why she was a Sephardi origin. That's another interesting story. But we didn't get along. We had no issue between one another. We just didn't hit it off. We dated 5 dates, and it just wouldn't, the plane stayed on the runway. It didn't take off. But why did I let it go 5 dates? Because every time, every conversation, everything we spoke about, she was positive. Any person we spoke about, she had good things to say. Any topic we spoke about, she had positive things to say. The words that flowed out of her mouth were positive about everything. So I'd walk away from every date feeling like, that was such a positive experience. And then I think back and say, we have zero chemistry. So he goes, 2 dates, 3 dates, 4 dates, we hit the 5th date. I said, I feel like we're not taking off. But I enjoyed meeting you, but I don't see that we can continue like this. We're not going anywhere. So we made up the breakup for a year, and hopefully both of us will get married by then. But you talk positive, people are happy talking to you. You use positive terms, they feel good walking away from the conversation, and we feel good ourselves. So that's something which a person can gauge. The words I use today, the words I use in my average conversation, how many of them are positive, how many of them are negative? Think about it. You'll see for yourself. And if we can get into the habit of speaking positive, we will end up being more positive, and the people around us will be more positive. So it's not only the tool I told that guy, walk home, prepare 5 minutes with smiles. It's also prepare many, many positive words to say. And you're going to find that at the onset, this is difficult. We're unaccustomed to being complimentary and being positive. So much so that very often when we are, people ask us if we're lying. I had a really good friend who I learned with for 3 years at least. And I'd tell him, good morning, it's good to see you. And one day, years later, he said to me, "Do you really mean it when you say that?" I was so shocked after so many years. We know one another for a decade and a half now. And he only asked me this question like a year or two ago. And it shocked me. I tell a guy I'm happy to see him, he thinks I'm lying. But people are unaccustomed to hearing positive words. Go tell your roommate, you know, "I'm happy you're my roommate." He's going to look at you and say, "What happened? What'd you do? What'd you break? What's wrong?" You know, right? That's, people are completely unaccustomed to positive verbiage. Stop, think. If you get into the habit, you will see that you will be happier and the people around you will also be happier. And this is one of the major tools in conversation that we could use in a home to make the home calmer and happier. And if you think about it, the applications are tremendous. If you challenge yourself to say 30 positive words before you've passed 5 minutes being home, you'll suddenly find yourself complimenting so many things you never thought to say a word about. "Oh, it's so nice of you that you went and you picked up the groceries today and you ironed my shirts and you laundered the things and you know I missed you today." Challenge yourself to say 30 positive words in 5 minutes. You'll suddenly find yourself being a much more positive person, a much more appreciative person. But we don't do that. We walk through the door and we say, "Oh, you did the shopping today? Did you remember the shampoo I asked you for?" Right? And that we think that's legitimate. That's not legitimate. Wait, shouldn't I have just said thank you? You schlepped all the groceries. You went and did the shopping. But that we don't think to do. So we have many opportunities to be positive. We don't take them. If we get into the habit of taking them, so then we make the house a much more pleasant place to be in.